Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. As you are making your travel plans, remember JohnnyDollar.com, a Priceline affiliate link, so you get all the benefits going through Priceline.com, such as being able to name your price on hotels, rental cars, airline tickets, and even more, or choosing from great published fares. But part of your purchase price goes to support the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, no additional cost to you. So remember, when making your travel plans, check JohnnyDollarAir.com first. Well, now we're going to get into today's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. And we do have a missing episode come into play, but maybe not as many as you might think. There is one episode that is missing in between last week's and this week's, even though this week's episode comes from July and last week's came from April. The reason for that is that the show went on hiatus from April 22nd until coming back on July 17th. Today's program actually originally aired July the 24th of 1949, and the title is Who Took the Taxis for a Ride?
Everybody knows a taxi driver likes being over-tipped, but you can't blame him for not liking being tipped over.
This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At insurance investigation, he's only an expert. At making out his expense account, he's an absolute genius.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Home Office, the Nutmeg State Liability Underwriters, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during my investigation of the disappearance of 12 Apex cabs, or who took the taxis for a ride. Expense account, item one, $3.10. Train fare, Hartford to New York. Item two, $1.10, dinner en route. Item three, $18, club car. Expense account, item four, $1.30, cab fare from station to garage and offices of Apex Taxi Company. I naturally waited for an Apex cab, but could have saved my time. The driver told me nothing, except that the man who came rushing out of the Apex office when we pulled up was the big boss, Mr. Gordon McKissick. Thanks, driver. He's just the man I'm looking for. Here.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, McKissick!
I can't stop now. I'm in a hurry. See me tomorrow.
Wait a minute, will you? I'm Johnny Dollar from the insurance company.
Oh, good. That's different. Just in time. Come along.
Where are we going?
Come on. Tell you in the car. Just had a call from the police. Another one of my cabs has been stolen.
Huh?
They found the driver slugged and unconscious, and I got to get out of there.
Huh?
I tell you, Dollar, I'm going crazy. This has got to stop. It's not only driving me out of business, it's driving me out of my mind. The police have done their best, and Lord knows I have, too. But I'm about ready to give up. This makes 12 of my taxi cabs disappear off the face of the earth. It's fantastic. I can't believe it.
Hold it, McKissick. Do us both a favor, will you?
Huh? What?
Play cucumber for a few seconds.
Oh.
Remember, the insurance company I represent has plenty to scream about, too. What I need is some facts.
I haven't got any facts. And if this keeps up, I won't have any taxis. They're gone, that's all. 12 of them, that's all there is to it.
Any idea of a motive? Some new kind of car theft?
That's what the cops say.
Okay, what's your idea? Robbing the drivers?
You don't have to steal a cab to rob a driver. It's ridiculous.
All right, then. What else could it be? Competition? Sabotage?
That's my guess. Competition. So far, it's only a guess. I'd give anything to know.
So would the insurance company. Anything. They'd even give up my happy young life.
This is it. 13th and East River.
Yeah, and there's the crowd. Humanity's strongest magnet.
All right.
Blood.
Yeah.
Back. Please. Stand back. Come on.
Hey, officer.
Huh?
Officer.
What do you want?
Look, here's my ID. This man is McKissick, the victim's boss. How about getting us through that crowd?
Well, all right, but I don't know. The right side of his face don't feel much like talking. It's caved in.
Stand aside now. Come on, move, move.
Let's get through here. Come on, Dollar, let's move in.
Clancy, okay. Open him up. I can't breathe right, in here, let alone the hurt man.
Get out of the way, will you?
Okay, Mr. Dollar, here you are.
Oh. Hey, are they right? Is this one of your men, McKissick?
Yeah, George Brandon. Been with me 4 years.
Brandon, listen to me. Who did it? Do you know who did it? Try hard, will you?
Never saw him before.
Yeah, Brandon, only one. Well, what did he look like? Come on, boy.
Hey, little guy. Dark. Talk funny.
He talked funny? How, Brandon? How? An accent? Come on, Brandon. Well, that's it.
All right, clear the way. Stand back. Clear the way for the ambulance.
The ambulance. The ambulance turns out to be the wrong kind of a wagon. Expense account, item 5, $28. Transportation the following day, visiting hospitals and the homes of the other 11 Apex drivers who had lost their cabs. During the course of this, I contracted a severe case of what GIs used to refer to as jeep seat. Out of 11 interviews, I got 3 clues. One, that up until last night's killing, the cab nappers had worked as a team. The little dark guy with an accent, as described by the dead driver Brandon, and a 300-pound accomplice wearing a seersucker suit, a Panama hat, and a complexion akin to a perspiring blob of leaf lard. This heavier of the two heavies, it seemed, never actively participated in any of the rough stuff, merely assuming the role of director of operations. Clue number 2, that in each instance, the driver's uniform cap was also stolen, which indicated to me merely that the getaway driver was very much interested in looking like a cab driver. Finally, clue number 3. From the most disgruntled of the drivers interviewed, the fact that the fleet owner McKissick had spent 3 years bootlegging, another 4 bookmaking, and had spent some very short vacations getting away from it all in prison, which naturally led me back to McKissick's Apex garage and office.
Come in. Oh, Dollar. Well, what have you found out?
Well, I'll tell you, McKissick. So far, I've just hit the ABCs. Later on, I'll get to the XYZs.
Look, Dollar, I'm getting fed up with double talk.
What I want to talk about is a double life. Yours.
What?
I once broke a leg jumping to a conclusion, so don't get me wrong. That's not what I'm doing. But a less experienced investigator might immediately assume that a man like you, an ex-bootlegger, ex-bookmaker, ex-jailbird, just might be stealing his own cabs for the insurance money.
Well, you small
now, wait a minute. Don't get that way, or I might also get the idea that you have a killer instinct.
My record's my own business. It was okay with the Hack Bureau. It was okay when that company sold me the insurance, so it'll have to be okay with you because you're stuck with it.
Nobody's calling you guilty.
Okay!
Okay, all I'm telling you is this. I want your cabs off the street until this thing is cleared up.
That's big talk, little man.
When the day shift comes in at 4:30, tell them to park their cabs in the garage. And you can tell your dispatcher the night shift isn't working tonight.
Bad enough to have my competition running me out of business. Now the little helper from the insurance company shows up to finish the job, huh?
I'm not trying to put you out of business. I'm trying to keep you in.
Well, it don't sound like it.
No cooperation from you, no insurance. I'll have it canceled as fast as I can get to a phone. How about it?
Okay, Dollar. I can't do anything about it. But if I were you, I wouldn't be caught hanging around here by any one of those drivers you're putting out of work. Some of them play rough.
You can always depend on a cab driver for being on time, when it's time to knock off work. By 5 o'clock, the garage was full of taxis and carbon monoxide fumes. By 5:30, it was devoid of humanity. And a night watchman I'd met before stood guard outside the locked gate. At 6 o'clock, a visitor dropped in on him, followed almost immediately by me.
Oh, senor, it is so important that I find it.
Yeah, yeah.
It contains everything I have in the world, almost.
Yeah,
my money, even my passport.
What's this, Vinny?
Huh?
Oh, Mr. Dollar. Yeah, yeah. Well, the young lady claims she lost...
My purse, senor. I hired one of your taxi cabs this afternoon and left my purse in it. So important that I get it.
Yeah, yeah. I told her to call Lost and Found in the morning.
But, senor, what will I do tonight?
While we're trying to figure that out, will you join me in a drink?
I would like that.
Her name was Marita Guastella. She was the dark type, so I took her around the corner to a dark saloon. On the way in, we passed four grumbling Apex cab drivers shooting hot looks at me over cold beers. I arranged her in a booth so I could keep an eye on them in case their intentions were no good, and an ear on her story, which I knew wasn't.
You see, this is my first trip to America. I came from Spain 2 weeks ago. This afternoon, I was shopping on Fifth Avenue, and that is when I took the cab from 49th Street to the Sherry Netherlands Hotel.
Uh-huh, 49th, Sherry Netherlands.
Yes.
What time did you take the cab?
Wait, I'm not sure exactly.
That would help.
Oh, it was exactly 10 minutes after four. I remember now, I looked at a clock.
Uh-huh. And what time did you arrive at the hotel, Marita?
Why are you writing all this down?
Just trying to help you find your purse.
Oh, but I do not want to put you to any trouble. I am perfectly willing to search through the taxis myself.
Honey, the city of New York has gone to a lot of trouble to save you that trouble. Every driver has to keep a record of every trip, where he picks up his passengers, where he drops them, and when.
Oh.
He puts it on a big card. So all we have to do is find out which card has your trip listed on it, then we'll know which cab.
Oh, I see.
Then we'll go to the little cab and probably find your little purse. All right?
Oh, it is very good of you, Senora. If you would not mind the trouble.
Sometimes bothering with this kind of trouble eliminates my employer's troubles. How about another martini? Expense account, item 6. $4, bar tab. Tip to waiter, $1. And here's a tip to young ladies who are pretending that they just came from Spain 2 weeks ago. Don't order birdbath martinis and put them away in one gulp. The drinking taste of Spanish ladies is more the sherry type. And martinis are hard enough to get used to in 2 years, let alone 2 weeks. Oh, who knows? Maybe she was just in a hurry to get to the Spanish olives. One thing was fairly apparent, though. She seemed to be in a hurry to get something out of one of those cabs, and not by way of the lost and found department. The least I could do, both as a gentleman and an insurance investigator, was to accept her phony-sounding story and take her back to the garage. I arm in arm the sometimes senorita around the block, passing the time in a conversation not exactly based on her mother's favorite recipe,
John,
or a Rosa con pollo. As we passed the office portion of the Apex cab building, I gave up looking into her eyes and saw something that was open even wider, the garage gate.
Jenny, what is it?
The watchman, he's gone.
Perhaps he just stepped inside.
Uh-uh. Look at the stains on the sidewalk. Blood.
Oh, Bridewell. He's been...
Bridewell? Who's Bridewell?
I do not know.
Who's Bridewell?
Please, let me go. Let me go, please, Johnny. You're hurting my arm.
Marita had twisted away and was hightailing it up the street. I went stamping up the ramp in the direction of the source of the scream. On the way up, I hit the light switch. In this racket, even big boys should be afraid of the dark. The first portal, I slowed my run into a pussyfoot pace and edged around the corner, sliding my back along the dispatcher's counter. When I got halfway down, the corner of my right eye picked off a pair of high black shoes, night watchman type. Heels on the floor, toes pointed up, sticking out from behind the end of the counter. I didn't have time to get a look at the rest of them. Something so round, so firm, and so fully loaded gave me a cold steel kiss under the left ear.
Pray do yourself the favor, sir, of remaining absolutely still. Now you may turn around.
Would this be Mr. Bridewell?
Good indeed, sir.
Well, what about the night watchman?
Have no fears for him. I am fortunately accomplished in the administration of first aid. But a good deal of practice. I've seen to it that he's resting comfortably.
I'll bet.
Well, Victor, my boy, I trust your search was successful.
Successful? Somebody beat us to it. All them cabs has been searched.
Nonsense, my boy. How can you tell in so short a time?
How about picking a look for yourself, fat boy?
You couldn't possibly have picked over all of them. Proceed with the search quickly. In the meantime, perhaps our friend here is the proprietor of the search that preceded ours.
In this case, practically anything could happen.
Yes, anything could. Knowing that should encourage you to mind your manners. Now, sir, will you accompany me to my hotel where we can discuss this further?
With you holding that .38 caliber steel-engraved invitation in your hand, I'd be a perfect cad to refuse.
In just a moment, we'll return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. But first, your armed forces are constantly searching for new methods and devices for national security and better peacetime living. Today's serviceman is a skilled professional who works with advanced techniques and equipment. If you're interested in science and technical subjects, your armed forces offers you a great opportunity now. Find out how you can join the world's greatest scientific enterprise, the Armed Forces of the United States. Now, with our star, Charles Russell, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. And tonight's story, Who Took the Taxis for a Ride?
Looking for some stolen taxi cabs and wound up in a hotel room looking stupid. Not wishing to make this a permanent effect, I put my mind to work, and the fruits of its labor went something like this. Whoever had been stealing those cabs, and I figured I was face to face with one of them now, had not been stealing the Apex rolling stock for the cabs themselves, but for something evidently hidden in one of them. From here on in, there was only one way to play it, by ear. And was easy, because the pasty-faced 300-pounder draped in a double-breasted seersucker tent was doing all
back
the talking.
In 1912, when I was expelled from Oxford University as a result of an unfortunate association with an unscrupulous proctor, I arrived at this decision, sir. It's sometimes not profitable to be on the apparently right side. I make myself clear.
Well, in a roundabout way, I think so.
Now then, I am thus fully acquainted with my position in regard to this matter of the Scarlet Madonna. But you, where do you stand?
I'm running a one-man escort service for Marita Guastella.
Ah, Marita. So, the lovely but unwise Marita has taken unto herself an accomplice, has she? Well, as long as you're allied with her, you and I must be at cross purposes.
Well, I'm open to suggestion.
Good. The girl is nothing more than a penniless adventuress, a common thief. But I, sir, may be able to tempt your trenchant loyalties with some very fetching terms. Mm-hmm. Well, Victor?
Yes, it's our man, all right. Knocked it out of the night watchman when he came to. There was only one guy in that garage besides us. This is him. Let's go to work.
Now, here, Victor. This is not the time for violence. The gentleman and I are about to discuss terms of mutual profit. Are we not, sir?
You were discussing. I was listening.
Yes. You'll find that I can be concise when the situation demands that I be. Shall we start with a figure of, say, $5,000?
Hey, I'm nuts. Let me work him over.
Now, Victor, you kindly remember that I deplore violence. Well, young man, what do you say?
Nuts to your $5,000, Mr. Bridewell.
Good heavens, man. Have you lost your mind? What do you think the Scarlet Madonna is worth to you?
Well, so far it's been worth one man's life, 12 taxicabs, on a used car lot that comes to more than $5,000.
$7,500 there.
Keep coming.
Now, see here now. There's not only a limit to my generosity, there's a limit to my patience. How else do you expect to realize such a handsome profit?
I haven't made up my mind.
Perhaps I can help you. Here are the problems you face. The Scarlet Madonna is no ordinary gem to be disposed of through the ordinary channels. You, sir, have the faintest notion of the importance of the jewel.
I've got a hunch I could retire for life on it.
A very short life it might be. It would be a pity if your blood were mixed with that already shed through the centuries over the Scarlet Madonna.
I don't waste time with that story, fat stuff. We haven't got all week.
My purpose in this repetitious recitation is bona fide. The bloody history may convince our friend. The no one since the year 1256 has been able to share for any appreciable length of time the company of the Scarlet Madonna.
Hey, tell him about the
well, that
pirate.
Was the year it was fashioned. He wore in the vestments of John of Vicenza. On March 20th of that year, he was ordered by Alexander IV to hasten to the province of Tuscany to aid in the routing of the heretics.
The pirate!
There, John was murdered and robbed of this jewel. And since that date, it has never ceased its bloody journey through history. England, France, and Spain.
Don't forget the pirate, that stuff.
Thank you, Victor, for your helpful interest. Indeed, it is true. During one of its bloodier experiences, it was woven into the beard of an Alsatian pirate, from which it fell when his head tumbled into the basket beneath a guillotine.
Yeah, that one killed me. You see, mister, don't go losing your head.
I'm trying not to. Look, Bridewell, if this rock is so hot, how come you're willing to risk your pudgy little neck for it?
Victor here and I are only the temporary middlemen for this infamous death.
You aren't yet.
Am I to understand that you refuse?
Well, I must say you tell a very good story. But the answer is still nothing doing.
I told you, fat stuff. We're wasting your breath on this guy.
Oh. All right, Victor. That's enough. Here, now, get up, young man.
Keep that monkey off of me or I'll yell the roof off this joint.
Yes, no, that won't be necessary. Now, put your hands up, please. Now, Victor, go through his pockets. Not that anyone would be foolish enough to carry the Scarlet Madonna.
Okay, now. Stand easy.
Oh, you'll kick your teeth in.
Don't try it. Hey.
All right.
You know what we got here? An insurance stick.
I know, Victor. One gun is enough.
Not for me, it ain't. He must be from the company insuring the rock.
No, no, Victor. I am thoroughly familiar with the policies covering the Scarlet Madonna. What's the gentleman's name?
Johnny Dollar from Hartford, Connecticut.
And right now, thinking there's no place like home. I'm leaving.
No, not alive, you ain't. We can't let him out of here. He's red hot for
us. Put down your weapon, Victor. There's been trouble enough.
Hunter, now you don't.
Oh, yes, I do. Back off, Buster.
Now, Victor, I must insist. Let him get away.
Let go of me.
Insurance investigator, whatever. If he knows where the jewel is, he's more good for us alive than dead. More valuable than even you.
The elevators weren't fast enough. I hit every fourth step down 8 flights of stairs to the lobby and out into the street.
Johnny, I must see you.
Oh, Marita. Well, this saves me looking for you. You just tag right along. Taxi!
Here you are, sir.
After you, Lady of Spain.
Thank you, Johnny.
You're welcome.
Oh, my poor Johnny. What did they do to you?
A gentleman named Victor hung a right hand on me, complete with signet ring.
Oh, Johnny.
Oh, never mind that hanky. I'm not in the mood to be dabbed at.
I'm so sorry. Johnny, what did they tell you?
Oh, no, you don't. First, I want to hear what you have to tell me. Then we'll compare stories.
Wait, there's not much to tell. The Scarlet Madonna is rightfully and legally mine. My only crime was to bring it into this country illegally through customs. I met Bridewell and that horrible Victor on the ship. When I got to New York, I realized that they were following me. I was terrified.
That I'll believe.
I was in a taxi cab, and they followed me in another. It forced us to a curb, and well, I hid the jewel in the upholstery of the taxi. Then I jumped out and fled for my life. All I remember is that it was an Apex cab. I've been trying to find the exact one ever since.
So apparently are they. How'd they find out?
They ran after me that night. Searched me and all of my belongings. And then when I started my search, they realized what I was doing.
Well, looks like anybody can catch the brass ring on this merry-go-round.
Please, Johnny, tell me that you will help me to recover the Madonna.
Look, gorgeous. All I'm trying to catch up with is a dozen stolen taxicabs.
But you are not just going to leave me flat?
With that figure? Impossible. I took Marita to a small hotel, got her a room, and while she was taking a bath, I stole her clothes and left her, locked in that strongest of Midtown prisons, nudity. The first joker I went looking for back at the Apex garage was the unfortunate night watchman. I found him sitting up and taking nourishment out of a bottle, and nursing an egg on his head that would have hatched an ostrich.
Oh, it's you, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah.
I tell you, I've been worried about you. Yeah. Thank heavens you're all right.
No thanks to you.
No. What do you mean, sir?
I mean, why'd you tell that sawed-off ape who slugged you around that I searched these cabs in here last night?
Why, I didn't mention you, sir. I told him it was the boss, McKissick.
Huh?
Yeah.
McKissick? Where is he now, do you know?
He just came by. I believe he's next door in his office.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, McKissick. This case is developing more suspects than a garlic breath in a crowded elevator.
Listen, McKissick. That's another thought. Scum. I tried to level with you. 10,000 is my top offer. Turn it over.
Let's see your money. You don't trust me, I don't trust you.
All right, you had your chance. From now on, there ain't no money. There ain't no money in it. No, Victor, no. Hey, what's it?
Here's what I owe you. Come on, get up. More. Then I finished the job he had started. I found the Scarlet Madonna clutched in McKissick's dead hand. For a Scarlet Madonna, it was mighty green. It was an emerald about the size of a pack of cigarettes that's been flattened out in your pocket. A Madonna figure was carved in bas-relief on one surface. As I stood over the body of McKissick, looking down at the green gem in my hand, I realized where it got its crimson name. For on the floor, outlying my hand, was a spreading pool of scarlet blood.
Well, sir, we meet again.
Yeah, so it seems.
May I offer you my congratulations, at the same time request that you hand over the Scarlet Madonna?
Being unarmed, as you are, you're not welcome to it.
Well, perhaps I have something more persuasive than a weapon. Here are my credentials.
I'll look at them if you'll back up against the wall.
Very well. You'll also find there a letter authorizing me to the legal possession of this infamous, this hateful, this accursed instrument of greed. To explain that it's been my odious duty to retrieve it for its rightful owner, the Stillwell Museum in London, from which it was stolen by Victor and his erstwhile lady-in-waiting, the exotic Merita.
Insurance investigator? You? Where do you come from? What's your outfit?
Yes, I thought I'd set you back on your heels. I'm from London. Pity we didn't have each other's interests classified earlier. We might very well have, shall we say, collaborated in this matter.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's an unvoiced question lurking on the tip of your tongue. My association with the bestial Victor.
Well, at this point, I didn't want to insult you.
I think nothing of it, my boy. Due to a fortunate similarity in voice and physique to your accomplished actor, Mr. Sidney Greenstreet, I find myself automatically listed as undoubtedly the villain of the piece. In this case, as in many others during my fantastically successful career as an insurance investigator, I was able to align myself with the basic source of the villainy involved. Further, I pray that you not accuse me of being associated with any of the physical violences which have punctuated this case. In short, this Victor fellow occasionally slipped through my fingers.
Look, all I'm trying to find is 12 lousy taxicabs.
Well, then, your troubles are at an end, my boy. I shall write out an address.
Fine.
And then there you shall find them unharmed in the warehouse hard by the East River.
Okay.
You'll forgive me, I'm sure, if I tell you that in this case, it is but another small milestone in the glorious pathway strewn with superior accomplishments in solving those minor mysteries evolved by the niggardly minds of the sniveling criminals who would offend the sanctity of that guardian of the peace of the public mind, the insurance company.
Amen. Expense account, item 7. $1.95, one evening gown, which was hard enough to find, but would probably be even harder to wear at that price, purchased in an all-night salon de mode on 136th Street. This dress I gave to Mr. Bridewell to take with him when he went calling on Senorita Marita Guastella prior to turning her over to the police. Expense account, item 8, $6.10. One bottle of you-know-what with which to gargle a half-good, half-bad taste left by this case out of my mouth. Expense account, item 9, transportation. No, come to think of it, you can forget this item for a while. I think I'd better stay here in Manhattan and rest up a bit. Expense account, item 9. $400. Advance. Entertainment and things while resting on my laurels. Or possibly Mr. Bridewell's laurels. But anyway, resting. Expense account total, $1,100. You fill in the cents. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Norman McDonald and stars Charles Russell, with script by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd. Featured in the cast were Herb Butterfield as Mr. Bridewell, with Paul Dubove, Lillian Bayef, Lou Krugman, Junius Matthews, Jan Arvin, and Jack Crucian. The special music is written and conducted by Leith Stevens. Be sure to be with us again at the same time next week when another most unusual expense account is handed in by...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
The great hit tunes of early 1939, Deep Purple, Penny Serenade, I Cried for You. How many more can you remember dancing to, romancing to? You'll hear them in smart new 1949 arrangements when your hit parade on parade comes along immediately over all of these same CBS stations. Alan Botzer speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is Andrew from OTRWesterns.com. I wanted to invite you to come take a look at our site where we put out podcasts of old-time radio westerns. Check us out at OTRWesterns.com. You're listening to The Great Detectives of Old-Time Radio with Adam Graham. Now let's get back into the show.
Welcome back. Well, several details of that plot seemed slightly familiar. There were so many nods and tips of the hat to the Maltese Falcon, but they still managed to do some original things and make some differentiation from that story. Of course, the biggest thing with the fat man character. And I absolutely love the idea that this guy has essentially made his career on the fact that he looks and sounds like Sidney Greenstreet, which is just a really good idea. Now, of course, having Sidney Greenstreet-esque characters on the side of the law isn't necessarily something new. If we look back to our Listener's Choice episode on Monday, we had a similar character turn out to be on the side of the law. But I kind of like the style with which they did this. This episode did show some retooling and refinement of the show, and we got to hear that a bit in the beginning with the teaser by Johnny, which I don't think was done by any other Johnny Dollar. Now we turn to listener comments and feedback, and we start with an email from Bishop Andrew, who writes, "Dear Adam, I listened to both versions of the Milford Brooks The Third Matter. Like you, I prefer the Russell script, but thought Dick Powell's reading better. I do think Brooks was played by Bob Bailey. I was partially distracted at one point and thought I was listening to Dollar, only realizing that it was Milford that was speaking. Having heard Bailey's Johnny Dollar more than anyone else's, I just think Johnny Dollar when I hear his voice. So if it wasn't Bailey playing Milford, it was someone with uncannily similar voice and delivery. Not that any of this really matters, but it is such fun. All the best." Well, thanks so much, Bishop Andrew. And we also have a comment from Bill. He writes, "Hi, Adam. You mentioned at the end of the episode the problems with identifying actors in old-time radio shows. So this may fall into that category. To me, it sounded like James Gregory, Inspector Luger from Barney Miller, playing Lieutenant Roach. Is there any way to find out if it was indeed him? But it was easy to identify Bill Conrad as Baron. It's been too long since he's made an appearance on The Great Detectives of Old-Time Radio." Well, thank you so much, Bill. Generally, with these sort of questions, the best I can do is research and to see if it is plausible. I've not seen Barney Miller, but I have seen Mr. Roach in some other productions, such as The Lawless Years. But as to the question of whether he was on Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, I did some research, and Mr. Gregory actually began his career on Broadway. He had a film role in 1948, but did not have another film role or television role till 1951. Checking on the Internet Broadway database, I see that from February of 1949 to November of 1950, he was the assistant stage manager Death of a Salesman on Broadway, and also was a performer. He played Biff as a replacement, which indicates to me that he would, if he did any radio, it would have been New York-based radio and would not have been in Hollywood. So I'm pretty certain that Mr. Gregory was not the voice of Lieutenant Roach. He would come into Hollywood in the middle 50s, excuse me, and he did appear in some episodes of the 21st Precinct. Outside of that, he actually, the only other appearance that the Radio Gold Index has for him was in an episode of The Golden Door in 1947, which came from WNYC in New York. Thanks for the question, Bill. Lawrence writes, put this under a useless trivia query. I wonder when they decided to do the end tag straight, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, without the pause. Well, I didn't hear any pause this week, so I kind of think either this week's show or the previous one that was missing. Now I want to go ahead and thank our Patreon of the day, and today we're thanking Lisa. Lisa has been one of our Patreon supporters since August of last year. She is currently supporting us at the Shamus level of $4 or more per month. Thank you so much for your support, Lisa. And that will do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow for Dragnet. Next Friday, we'll be back with another episode of yours truly, Johnny Dollar. In the meantime, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.